From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Larry Harmon died in 2008. Harmon was also known as Bozo the Clown, and he was something of a genius in the entertainment world. Before his death, he wrote a book about his life with the help of my guest, Thomas Scott McKenzie. The book is called The Man Behind the Nose, Assassins, Astronauts, Cannibals, and Other Stupendous Tales. Thomas Scott McKenzie, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you for having me.
I love your book. It's great. I love Larry Harmon now. I feel like I know him because he's been talking to me. but you actually did know him. How did you get to meet him, and how did you get involved in writing his book with him?
Well, when Larry had reached a point in his, you know, he was in his 80s, and he was reflecting back on this amazing life that he had led, and he felt like it was time to do a book and share some of his tales and hopefully inspire some readers. So he wanted to do a book, and a mutual friend introduced us, and I actually didn't know a whole lot about Bozo the Clown, but certainly I was thrilled at the opportunity to work with such an American icon. And Larry and I just kind of hit it off, and we started working on the book together.
You look like a young man, if you don't mind. How old are you?
I'm 38.
Oh, well, you look like you're about 17 in your picture. You must use an old picture in your on your no. So just a little not that much younger, but a little too young to have seen Bozo firsthand.
Yeah, I grew up way out in the country, and you know, it was I grew up on a horse farm, and we were out in the boonies, and we were lucky if we got one channel on the television, and that was if the weather was just right, and you were holding the antenna. I did have friends and relatives that I would go to, and they had cable, and I remember seeing the WGN version out of Chicago on their cable superstation, but I didn't watch it very much, but certainly. The minute that I met Larry and started working on the book, the thing that really fascinated me was how many people I encountered who had such vivid memories of Bozo as a child.
Yeah, you know, knowing Larry Harmon now, as I do from your book, you'd think if there was only one station, he was probably on it. But it's kind of an amazing story, and I think there's a lot of people who, when they see Larry Harmon as Bozo, they think, wait a minute, that's not Bozo. Everybody has their own Bozo, and Larry Harmon is sort of responsible for that. I think what's one of the most amazing aspects of the story, tell a little bit about how he kind of, even before syndication, came up with the idea of franchising his character.
Right. Well, the character was originally created by Capitol Records for a series of children's recordings where you got an album and you had a little book that the child could flip through. And there were a handful of people who portrayed the character during the Capitol days. By about the mid-50s, the Capitol's interest had waned in the character a little bit, and Larry Harmon decided that this was the perfect vehicle to sort of achieve his own entertainment ambitions. So he took over the character, tweaked it, and refined it a little bit, and then he set out to spread the character to television channels all over the globe. At the time, in the mid-50s, television was still a relatively new phenomenon, and certainly there wasn't the structure and the organizations that we have today. And so instead of having one single Bozo show that was transmitted all across the country, what Larry did was he went to every television station that he could visit, and he sold them a local Bozo show. And so ultimately there were over 180 different shows, not just in America, but the show was on in Brazil, it was on in Greece, it was on in Thailand, and each one of them had their own local Bozo. So people will argue with you, and they'll say, no, my Bozo was the only Bozo. Or some people get very competitive about it, and they'll say, my Bozo was the best Bozo. But there were actually over 200 men who portrayed the character sort of under Larry's oversight. He was kind of the CEO Bozo, if you will.
As people who grew up in Chicago are particularly righteous about their Bozo.
Right. Bob Bell and Joey DeOria are certainly well known and you know really beloved in the Windy City. Larry himself was always very appreciative of all of the men who portrayed the character, because Larry was really dedicated to making sure that Bozo would live on forever. And he was really very cognizant of trying to make sure that he protected the legacy. And he knew that, you know, one bad performance could ruin that or could sort of break that magic. And the fact that all of these dozens of men had worked so hard and did such a great job, he was so appreciative of all of them. So Larry never really singled anybody out when we were talking, but certainly people from Chicago are very proud of their performers there.
When other bozos dressed up as Bozo, must they look exactly like Larry Harmon looked? Was there a specific design to the Bozo face that had to adhere to?
There is. You know, the WGN in Chicago, there was a slightly different costume there, and the makeup is slightly different. But everywhere else, you were supposed to look as much alike as you could. Now, obviously, there were physical differences from one actor to another. But as this idea of perpetuating a character that would live on forever, Larry really wanted it to be as consistent as possible with all the performers. And, for example, one of the rules are that you're never allowed to show any bare skin when you're in the Bozo costume. You know, if you reach out your arm, your arms have to be covered so no one sees, you know, normal flesh tones. And the idea was this, was, you know, Larry just felt like, you know, there's nothing more disappointing when you're a child and you go to the mall and you're sitting on Santa Claus's lap and you realize that his beard is fake or something like that. And so Larry was very sort of protective of the character's sort of magical identity. And so all the performers should have looked alike.
Now, how come, why didn't he just be Bozo everywhere in the same way that, you know, I don't know, lots of, Captain Kangaroo is the only Captain Kangaroo. So why not just, you know, do it that way? Why have a different, but what was the advantage of having a local Bozo?
Well, Larry felt like when he first started the show, he just felt like, it was just too hard to try to get to the major networks and to get a major network show. I mean, he had done a lot of work in Hollywood, and he had been in some movies, and he had done some radio, but, you know, he just felt like, you know, how am I ever going to get an NBC to pick up my show? It just seemed like, you know, such an insurmountable kind of odds. And so he felt like, I can start small and kind of build on to this sort of empire, if you will. At the same time, having different shows allowed for a certain element of appealing to different regional dialects or regional senses of humor. And so even though he tried to maintain some consistency across all the characters, the Bozo in Little Rock, Arkansas would obviously sound very different than the Bozo in Boston, Massachusetts. And he felt like that would speak well to the people, to the children watching the show, that it would make them feel more like their own, instead of somebody who maybe sounded different than what they sounded like.
And he had, of course, a piece of all of the Bozo shows all over the country.
Right. I mean, you know, one of the things is that, you know, Larry was kind of the prototypical clown, but he was also a very, very astute businessman. And one of the things that we talk about in The Man Behind the Nose is that, for example, he also purchased the rights to the Laurel and Hardy characters in the early 60s. He ran an animation studio. He produced some movies. So he was very very cognizant of the business side of things, as well as the entertainment and laughter side.
Right, so he didn't just sell the name Bozo to the franchisees. I mean, he provided them with cartoons and the program itself, minus the Bozo and the studio audience.
That's correct, yeah. He really tried to oversee the shows. I mean, he would make sure, he would just try to make sure that they were doing the right things for the character and for the sort of integrity of the show.
Now, you mentioned his animation studio. I want to talk about that a little bit. And also, I know he did comic books that were under Larry Harmon Productions, I guess you would say, and which included Laurel and Hardy comic books. So he took on... He bought the characters of Laurel and Hardy. Stan Laurel was still alive at the time, wasn't he?
That's right. The actual contract that was signed, he worked with Stan Laurel to negotiate the deal, and Oliver Hardy's wife, Lucille. So they were part of transferring the characters.
And so he made Bozo the Clown cartoons as well as Laurel and Hardy cartoons. Was he an animator himself, or he hired animators, or what?
He was not an animator, but when he was kind of planning the Bozo show, one of the things that it sort of dawned on him was that providing cartoons to augment the live-action show that would be recorded in front of a live audience. He felt like the cartoons would kind of break things up for the viewers, provide a different, just kind of a change of pace for children watching the show. But then also the cartoons could play a very pivotal role in establishing the fact that, that the Bozo character could kind of live forever, because the cartoons allowed Bozo to do the things that we're used to Bugs Bunny or Daffy Duck or any of these people doing in cartoons, like walk off a building or, you know, run across water when he's being chased by an alligator or something like that. So the cartoons sort of provided an additional way to show that, you know, Bozo was kind of eternal and would live forever.
We're chatting with Thomas Scott McKenzie, and he is the co-author of Larry Bozo Harmon's autobiography, The Man Behind the Nose. And it's a riot, this book. It's got laughs on every page with little tiny figure, you know, pictures that just crack me up every time, and I think you'll all enjoy reading it. But let me ask you, Thomas Scott McKenzie, one of the greatest entertainers of the first half of the 20th century was Al Jolson, although today I think Jolson is mostly forgotten or thought of as being a racist character, even though he himself wasn't racist because he was a minstrel performer. And I guess maybe it's true that no electronic medium accurately captures Jolson's talent, whether it's records or movies. But Larry Harmon was extremely influenced by Jolson and, in fact, encountered Jolson. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, one of Larry's earliest memories was of watching The Jazz Singer and seeing that film and being really amazed by the way that Jolson put on the makeup and became almost another person. And obviously, as you mentioned, you know, by today's standards, minstrel performers using the makeup is not really viewed upon with positive kind of attitudes. But back then, it was much more accepted, and it was just a regular part of show business. But it was this idea of transforming yourself and becoming somebody else. And Larry was really fascinated by that. And as he got older, he really idolized Al Jolson because there were these stories of Jolson putting on 3- and 4-hour concerts and coming back out, just constantly doing more and more encores and just giving everything he could to his audience. Then at one point, Larry, in his life, he was in the Army, and he was in his early 20s, and he was kind of facing this sort of fork in the road that so many of us face of, you know, do I pursue my passions and my dreams and take the big risk, or do I take a more practical, safe route with my career? And he met Al Jolson, and Al Jolson encouraged him to go into entertainment. And that was ultimately what kind of set Larry down this path towards being Bozo the Clown.
Before he put on the Bozo makeup, what had he been doing? What was his background as a performer?
Well, you know, one of Larry's earliest kind of performing achievements was he was a drum major for both high school and in college for the USC Trojan Marching Band. After he finished his education, he moved to Hollywood and just started just kind of hustling. I mean, really just doing anything he could. He had extra parts in some movies like The Red Badge of Courage and things like that. He did some radio performances for Nero Wolf and some radio television radio shows. He often would joke about the fact that he would have auditioned for the role of the Lone Ranger's horse if they let him. Larry just simply believed in doing anything and everything. And so he hustled. You know, he didn't have any one particular kind of entertainment gig that was his trademark at that time. He was just doing everything, trying to get his foot in the door, trying to build a career. He did have a starring role as on a television show called Commander Comet in the early 50s. That was one of his main kind of major breakthroughs before becoming Bozo. But really, it was just, you know, he just hustled. He did everything he could.
He sang and danced as well.
Yeah, he played, he played drums and he played upright bass in a jazz, little jazz combo that would gig around Hollywood. Just anything he could do, he would be there to do it.
Now, tell us a little bit about this earlier show, Captain Comet. What was that all about?
Well, it was in the early 50s, and this was one of the earliest television shows about outer space. And Larry was Commander Comet, and one of the kind of neat little pieces of trivia is that he actually purchased the robot from the classic movie The Day the Earth Stood Still. And he made some changes to that robot prop, and that became sort of his comrade in outer space on the television show. And they would put on skits, and they would do different things. And then he would also have guests on, where he would talk about advancements in air travel and ultimately space travel.
So he actually would have, he would sort of take the role of the interviewer with these guests, or the guests would play a role in the show, or what?
That's right. I mean, he would, you know, it was both a combination of, they would do skits and they were kind of, it was an entertainment show, but he would also try to have people come on that he could interact with, and it was still a children's show. So, you know, it wasn't, you know, this wasn't Nightline kind of interview sort of thing. It wasn't, you know, Charlie Rose, but he would bring guests on and try to sort of educate the viewers about some of these topics. And as Larry was telling me about the Commander Comet show, in my own life, I was thinking about when I was a child and used to watch the Muppets. You know, and they would always have that celebrity come on the show. And you know, maybe the celebrity would play some of their own music or something like that. And that was kind of the way I envisioned it from the way Larry told me about Commander Comet.
And tell us a little bit about the Bozo program itself. What did the Bozo show consist of, and how long was it, and when was it on?
Well, you know, it varied depending on which market it was on, but for the most part, the Bozo Show was typically a 30-minute show, and in most places it came on 5 days a week. At some point in the late, you know, in the later years, once you start getting into the 70s and early 80s, most of the Bozo shows went to a Saturday morning where it was only one time a week. But during the 30 minutes, typically, Bozo would come out, you'd have a live audience that ranged from 50 people to maybe a couple of hundred people. And, you know, they would have different characters. You know, it was not just Bozo. There were other characters like Professor Tweety Foofer and Ma Nelly and some of these other people that would come on. And, you know, they would entertain the kids. There were some classic videos of having jugglers come on and do different things like that. And then they would always have the cartoon in the middle of the show. And then typically there was some form of audience interaction where there would be a game that they might select one of the children to come up and play a game. People who grew up watching the WGN show, for example, were really well aware of the grand prize game where you had the buckets that you could win something. And so it was generally about a 30-minute show. And Bozo would typically try to end the show with some little saying or something to try to teach the children. For example, one of the things was they would say, it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice. Because Bozo wasn't really about education in a heavy-handed kind of way. They didn't want to force things down people's throat. But they would try to get a message in there subtly.
We're chatting with Thomas Scott McKenzie, co-author of The Man Behind the Nose, the book, the autobiography of Larry Bozo Harmon. Well, the book, let's just talk about the book for a minute. I just absolutely love the way this book is put together. There's even a cutout of Bozo on the dust cover of it. How much input did you have in the way, who put this book together? Did Larry Harmon design the book as well, or what?
We were really thrilled with the visual appeal of the book, and you know, people that see this book at the bookstores just go nuts about it because it's not just black words on white paper. We worked really hard to try to make this a very visually distinctive book. And, you know, the team at Igniter Books and HarperCollins work with a design firm called Meat and Potatoes that did the design. Although Larry and after Larry's passing, you know, Larry Harmon's estate were very pivotal in providing a lot of the images and things that you see in the book. So it was definitely a team effort to try to get the book to look the way it does. And we're really, really proud of the way it just appears. It looks like nothing else in the bookstore.
That's absolutely true. Now, in the subtitle of the book, it says Assassins, Astronauts, Cannibals, and Stupendous Tales. So obviously it's about more than just doing a kids show in the afternoons. Tell us a little bit about some of these things. How did, in what way did Larry Harmon encounter assassins? There was someone out to assassinate Bozo?
Yeah, well, the Man Behind the Nose, part of why we selected that title is that it's not just the story of a clown, but it's the story of a businessman, of an adventurer, and of an eternal optimist who harnessed the power of this clown to bring laughter to millions of people all over the globe. And Larry really led a reality show existence decades before we knew what reality shows were. You know, he believed in challenging himself and taking on crazy adventures and doing things that people told him he couldn't do. And one of those things was running for president. And, you know, I think when you go through life wearing size 83 AAA floppy shoes and a big giant red wig, you probably attract a fair amount of people that might not be terribly stable in life. And, you know, Larry certainly bumped into somebody on his presidential campaign who did not have good intentions in mind, but luckily, you know, he wasn't harmed during that adventure and lived to tell the tale.
And astronauts? Did Larry Harmon want to travel in space? He wanted Bozo to be on the moon or what?
Yeah, Larry was fascinated by the idea of space travel, and you know, that was one of the reasons why he was attracted to the Commander Comet show in the early 50s. Well, a couple of, you know, some years later, at the point where Bozo was really, really at the height of the kind of Bozo phenomenon, Larry decided that Bozo needed to train as an astronaut to experience zero gravity. And he spoke with the government and got them to allow him to train at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and to go up on these planes that are nicknamed vomit comets. And these planes go through a maneuver where they replicate zero gravity. And there's some pictures in the book, and there's actually amazing video footage of Bozo the Clown in full costume floating in zero gravity. It's really hilarious.
And Larry Harmon was almost killed by a giant snake.
Yeah, I mean, he was in, that story came from when he was in Thailand promoting the show, and he was at this park that was near a zoo, and they, you know, it was just this kind of free-for-all entertainment of these kids in the audience, and they bring out this giant python and wrap it around him. And, you know, he doesn't speak the language, and he's got the MC, is talking to the audience, and the snake starts tightening up on Larry. And Larry starts waving his arms and yelling and screaming, and everybody thinks it's part of the gag. They all think it's part of this shtick. And he's trying to let them know, no, really, this is for real. This snake is trying to crush me. And they all just thought it was part of the act. And he really thought, you know, it was lights out for him. But the Bozo costume kind of saved the day in that instance.
And when you were working with Larry Harmon, what was your interaction with him like? What was your contribution to the book like?
Well, you know, Larry was really involved in this book. Sometimes you get celebrity memoirs where the celebrity gives like a, you know, spends one afternoon giving interviews, and then the writer goes off and just does the book, and they never talk to each other or anything. And that's how you end up with situations where, like, Charles Barkley said he was misquoted in his own book. Larry wasn't like that. Larry was very, very involved in this book. And what our sort of working relationship evolved into is that we would either meet in Los Angeles or we would talk on the phone, and Larry would just tell story after story after story. And then we would go over pages just word for word, just in painstaking detail, because he really was a perfectionist with everything related to the character. But we got into this habit of speaking every Sunday, and I write in the book that, you know, Mitch Albom was lucky enough to have Tuesdays with Maury, and that was a great experience in his life. For me, I got to have something even better. I got to have Sundays with Bozo.
The book is called The Man Behind the Nose, Larry Bozo Harmon, with Thomas Scott McKenzie, Assassins, Astronauts, Cannibals, and Stupendous Tales. It's such a great book, and I had so much fun reading it, and it's really been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for being with us on From the Bookshelf, Thomas Scott McKenzie.
Thank you for having me.
That's all the time we have for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. I sure hope you enjoyed the program and that you'll come back again next week for another great show. In the meantime, you can check out our podcast page at kusp.org or find us on Facebook or iTunes. I want to thank Thomas Scott McKenzie for being my guest this week, the co-author of the book The Man Behind the Nose by Larry Bozo Harmon. I want to thank our From the Bookshelf staff, the lovely and talented Ms. Breanne Beal, for all of her hard work. Thanks, Breanne. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.